no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left. Side stories.
Yeah, you love your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Side stories. Yes. We survived Atlantic City.
Barely, man. We survived Atlantic City.
Holy shit, dude.
We were on our Gallagher 2 tour, which involved three shows in two casinos, and I think it's safe to say, this is my little joke. Remember my little joke, Henry?
Yes.
I'm a gambler with a comedy problem.
That's very scary. It's very scary. Once you have mug-like catchphrases for your gambling addiction, that's when it gets scary, because you're normalizing it. You're shifting it to the center. But no, I'll say, you, all right, you were, I'm going to say, gambling irresponsibly in Atlantic City. And
Yes,
a direct witness of it, you were trying to show Marcus and I the ropes, which was a funny sighting in the first place, because it was just a huge father with his two ghoul-like children walking through the casino. Kissel's just like, let's go. Let's go. We got to go. We got to hit the tables. I'm going to show you. Blackout 17. Blackout 17. It's that easy. And he's yelling. And meanwhile, Marcus and I are like, we want to go to the ice cream store. Daddy, you said we were going to go to the roller coasters 3 hours ago, Daddy. Daddy, I want a hot dog.
But Henry, we can't, before we start the show, full disclosure, in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, that roulette, I had an iconic roulette run. I had 11 numbers on the board. I had stacks of chips in front of me. I you know, it's funny because of all our fans are just big dudes. So it's just a bunch of big guys being like, all right, let's see what you got, man. I mean, you know, we're not Leonardo DiCaprio. We weren't surrounded by supermodels. I like my beefy boys. And they were very encouraging.
You had quite a collection of hirsute young men staring at you like you were Bobby Bonilla in his prime. They were so entranced by your game playing. Because I'll say this, right? So Atlantic City, yes, irresponsibly done.
Yeah.
We all got very, very drunk.
Yeah.
I know I lost $300 immediately.
Right.
But though, I will say, Kissel, somewhere in a haze, you walked over to another casino. We left one location to go to a second location, which you're never supposed to do.
I know.
We went to another place. You were literally, and you were trying to explain it to me. You were like, hey, listen, I'll show you the whole map. The whole map is as easy as pie. It's just you got to game it. You got to be smarter than the ball.
Your impression of me is a little bit more, it's more stroke victim than hammered, but I'll take it.
You don't know what it gets to. It's not about just us sitting at the bar. It's you become a different type of person in front of the casino. It's like your eyes turn into little dice and you become somebody else. But I did watch you go click, 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 and just put money all over a roulette table and you just like staring at it, fucking won $500.
There it was.
Okay. But then you lost it all.
Yes, of course.
You lost it all. But in Bethlehem, that run you were on,
woo,
was scary.
It was awesome.
Because you're like, I'm calling the numbers. I looked for you for an hour. I couldn't find you. All of a sudden, you get over there, and the way you're talking, you're holding court with all these sandwich boys and trying to explain to them how, like, you say, yeah, you just do this, you should do this, and they don't have the money that you're wasting. We just left getting paid. We went from a paid gig. You just went bleep, 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 bleep with your big old feet over to a roulette table. These are people that are there on vacation.
No,
they didn't just get paid. They have already been spending money and watching you lead a bad example.
No, I was fairly conservative. I did not waste too much money, everyone, because we respect your money when it comes to Patreon. But I will say this. What's the secret before? This is not a gambling podcast, but what's the secret? I stick with black odds, and I'll occasionally do a zero or a double zero, but I have my structure, and the game comes to me. You don't want to chase. You want the game to come to you. That's how you do it. All right, everyone. This is Side Stories. I am Ben. That's Henry. Thank you. But in all seriousness, thank you all so much for coming out to the shows in AC, in Bethlehem.
So much fun.
And in Port Chester.
And I will say, it was fun getting a chance to hang out with a bunch of the fans, too, on the casino floor.
Oh, yeah.
It was a funny set of circumstances to be there because I'm not a real gambler, so
no,
we don't take it seriously. And in AC, Kissel was getting a little mad because we don't take it seriously, which is still very funny. It still does work.
No, that's the problem with being comedian. comedians, if like if I am getting aggravated, you're like, Ben's getting mad. This is really fun. And it's like, it's not fun. We're trying to focus.
Driving it up.
We're trying to focus.
Driving it up.
There was one guy that we were playing with in Bethlehem who had a $100 chip, and he's like, putting it on black. My girlfriend says if I lose it, she's going to leave me. And then just hit red. And I was like, okay. You just have to.
You're single.
Now you have to go. But anyway, Henry, you know what today is?
What?
It's not just any old day. Today is the 30th anniversary of Kyle and Lyle, the Menendez brothers, killing their parents.
Wow, good for them.
Isn't that crazy?
Do you think they still have problems?
I'm sorry, Lyle and Eric. Kyle and Lyle just sounded better. Lyle and Eric.
Now, do you think that they, do you think they celebrate Mother's and Father's Day in jail?
I don't know.
Do you think that they go like, gotcha, mommy. Gotcha, daddy. Whenever it comes up.
I bet you that they probably get taunted every Mother's and Father's Day, just being like, hey, you guys get a car today? Oh, you didn't? Because you killed your parents? I get it.
Well, you know, they actually just showed you have to be proactive about your problems. Actually, I don't agree with what I just said.
No, of course
I don't
not.
Agree with the statements that Henry Zebrowski made.
Very good. See, you're doing so much better. That's why free speech jail has been pretty unoccupied lately.
I am not recuperated, though. I'm just waiting in the darkness.
Okay.
The time will come. The time will come again for me. It will come again.
Oh,
you'll see.
I'm aware.
Oh, you'll see. But wait until my 70s.
Wait until you're 70. Wait until 10 minutes from now. But if you do want to feel old, Henry, Lyle is now 51 years old.
And, whoa!
And Eric is 48. They are.
Whoa!
Like, it's just. They're, but, you know, it's one of those things where there'll always be teenagers to me, you know?
Me too, man. They're frozen in time. It's like Madonna. Madonna will always be that we were talking about the sex book that Madonna put out.
Oh,
Madonna
my God,
will always be that era Madonna just burnt into my scrotum.
Absolutely.
By the years of masturbating. I do love her music, too. I'll still dance to it.
Of course. Real life.
But I can't do the complicated voguing. I do watch some of that. That's very, very intense.
Oh, yeah. It's a real workout there. It's like yoga. So there it is, 30 years ago today. So if you don't know about that case, we actually covered the Menendez brothers case. So you can go back in our archives and give that a listen. A compelling, interesting story. And they really, I mean, they almost got away with it. But
they almost got away with it, but they just love that money. They love showing off that money, and that's how it done go. They were so excited to be orphans. You know, and there's not a lot of people that are that excited to be orphans. It's
right.
Just Richie Rich and Heathcliff. They're the only ones that really, really benefited from being orphans. We can quickly update you on the Jeffrey Epstein mystery that is unfolding into absolutely nothing so far. We will just quickly do this because we don't want to do another dedicated episode to the story until something concrete really comes out, I don't know if it ever will.
Who knows?
But what we know now is, right, Epstein's bones in his neck on his autopsy were viewed to be broken, which technically means it is slightly more statistically likely that he was strangled than suffocated.
Right.
But then the actual official cause of death came out as suffocation. So who's playing a game here? We don't know. It's just a little bit more likely that he was strangled. But technically, if he also just botched the job of hanging himself, he could have done the same thing. He literally could have jumped off his bed and have hung suspended. We have no fucking clue.
Yeah, perhaps.
We don't know, because that footage hasn't come out. We have no clue. We have no proof.
And as we predicted, so we have that information, and of course that water that is being muddied every single day. And I do want to comment, when it comes to conspiracy theory, those are now being so mainstreamed. And of course, when we get into politics, we'll talk more about this case on Abe Lincoln's Top Hat.
Yes, but check out the coverage on Abe Lincoln's Top Hat as this rolls forward.
Yes.
Because Kissel's going to do a lot more work on the straight up, just what is the information that is coming in and the political ramifications. Because that's where this story is kind of headed to,
but
is watching people spin it for political reasons.
Exactly. And so that's something we do have to be careful with, because once the government starts spinning the conspiracy theories, they're just doing that so they can continue to get away with it. It's much better if the spotlight is off of them and onto much larger notions or concepts like the Illuminati. So they're hiding in plain sight. It's still the same. And when the president and his crew start sounding like Alex Jones, that's on purpose.
That is on purpose. They are using the storyline for their own benefit, for whatever benefit it is. If it is just political confusion, or or what has become known was when the president says that somebody else did something, it means that he did it.
Right.
Now, Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yes.
But I don't want to say anything. I also think that I don't think that he had anything necessarily to do with it. I just think that he definitely benefits from it.
Oh, wait.
Ghislaine Maxwell, now, immediately after we put out our episode,
yep,
was discovered living, she had lived with a longtime boyfriend for 3 years in a mansion in Manchester by the Sea, aww, in Boston, right? So she actually was there, so they did locate her then, so that mystery was over, but then pictures emerged later in the week of Ghislaine Maxwell at an In-N-Out Burger yes, in Los Angeles. Her, first of all, just the idea of seeing Ghislaine Maxwell at an In-N-Out is really funny because I don't think that she'd be the type of person to really eat a fast food burger. I don't know if she's ever seen one.
I don't know.
Just like, I think she's like, so these burgers are pre-prepared.
Ooh.
Yes, Ghislaine, yes. It's a big, yeah? What is this? Is it like confit? Is this like duck confit? No, it is sort of like that, but it's a hamburger. You fucking bitch. I'm going to call the police. But is she literally, she is hiding. She doesn't know what ketchup is, but they're now saying that those pictures might have been staged.
But Henry, honestly, I'm going to give her, I'm not going to give her any credit. I mean, she's the woman behind getting all the children for Jeffrey Epstein to rape. But she trolled the CIA pretty hardcore in that photo shoot because she was reading a book called The Mysterious Lives and Deaths of CIA Agents, which is just a straight up like, hey guys, I'm watching you too, and I know how you die.
They are straight up playing this like a television show.
They really are.
She is playing her part, but they believe it was staged by her lawyer. But we don't know if that's true because that came out in the Daily Mail, which was just trying to do, they're in a gotcha competition with the New York Post because
yes,
the New York Post put those pictures out. So now we have no clue what's real or what's not real. And congratulations, U.S. government, you did it.
You did it again. I will say our prediction was correct on last week's episode, though. Miss Maxwell is certainly now the tip of the spear. And if I am her, I am not happy that Epstein is out of the way because now people want action. They want someone to be prosecuted. Obviously, they're going to go after Epstein's estate. There's going to be some money coming in, as there should be. They should all get everything. They should all be split up, sold, and they should get some cash. But I think Maxwell is currently got to be sweating quite a bit. We also learned just a little bit more about this really weird, you know, what is it, St. James Island, aka the set from Midsummer. It is
what,
literally the set from Midsummer.
It is a beautiful piece of property.
Oh, my
honestly,
God.
Honestly, because we watched some of that drone footage.
Woo.
If you look at, like, I think if people have been talking a little bit about this, is that there's a drone footage channel on YouTube. I forgot what it's called. Let me look this up.
Yeah, what is the exciting name of the drone channel
Epstein
on YouTube?
Drone. I think it's Rusty Shackleford.
Oh, no, Rusty Shackleford, that's from King of the Hill. That's the dude from...
That's the name of a character, but that's the name of his YouTube channel.
Yes, he has been on it for a long time. He's a conspiracy theory page on YouTube. But this drone footage, man, Henry, so let's talk about this one area because I do think this is interesting. You got that disgusting-looking blue-white striped box, right?
And it's his masseuse, it's a little masseuse room.
Yes, his little masseuse room. Interestingly enough, my understanding is it only locks from the outside, which is horrifying, and it used to have a gold dome on top until the wind blew it off, so a lot of people were referring to it as a temple or something like that, and it is like super creepy. It does seem, again, like one of the housing locations in the movie Midsummer, but they said there was a bunch of beds in there and things like that, so I'm assuming it's the quarters where everyone would sleep. Perhaps it was where he kept some of his victims, some of the people that were working the events. We don't know. And then there's this empty field that just looks like it could only be used for mass murder. I have no idea. It's like
it's
the
some kind of
field
mass
ever.
Murder, Bohemian Grove style party. Maybe honestly, so much fun in there. Toss a football around in there.
Sure.
Remember those Whistler?
The Nerf.
The Nerf whistle footballs. That'd be so much fun. You get down there. You got a couple of 15-year-olds looking for it whenever you lose it in the woods. That's going to be so much fun.
Oh,
you and your buddies hanging out there. Like, you got a little boat there. Beautiful lagoon. You could see how a man who loves his privacy, he would look at this. It's because about location, location, location. What an incredible vacation spot I mean, now yes. I hope finally somebody honest, like an Elon Musk mm-hmm. or a Tyler Perry, can own this island yes. and really, really flip it. Or somebody, Rodney Dangerfield's in it, because that's what I'm really hoping for.
Right.
Turn it into a fucking cruise location. Fucking blast it out. Put your butt all over it. Put a bunch of water slides on it. Invite people from Pittsburgh and St. Paul and our people. Our people to go down there and to flop around all covered in zinc and 90 SPF and just throwing beer cans everywhere.
Oh, honestly, yes. We have to reclaim that land in the name of fun and in the name of celebration and party. Yeah, just the idea of former Governor Bill Richardson and Alan Dershowitz tossing the football around. Nothing more athletic than those two clowns. So
no, it was just a bunch of people bent over and they were trying to fit the footballs inside of them.
It was horrible. I'm sure it was disgusting. And obviously that island, again, needs to be sold, hopefully, to someone who will, who definitely will do something much better than Jeffrey Epstein. So
but
we will
from now on, this story for us is going to be over until we see more. But for further coverage, please go do Abe Lincoln's Top Hat, because that's where it's going to be.
That's where we're going to be. All right, let's move on to some, man, this week, I don't know what happened, but it's another week full of madness and mayhem in the world.
Like it never stops. I want to do this first story. I want to do the story about this Edmonton man.
Okay, let's do that.
All right, so this is a story about an Edmonton man. Admits to gruesome killing, says he's not criminally responsible. This is reported by the Global News by Fletcher Kent. Silva Kushwal has admitted to stabbing his ex-girlfriend 101 times, mutilating her body. Now a judge must decide whether he was criminally responsible. The Edmonton man was convicted Monday of the second-degree murder of 38-year-old Nadine Scow on August 24th, 2015, and in offering an indignity to her body. The agreed statement of facts read at Kushwal's trial Monday said the pair had dated for 3 years but were no longer together. Early one morning, Kushwal came to Scow's building and walked into her suite. He stabbed her to death, leaving a scene that senior homicide investigator Bill Clark described at the time as one of the most horrific of his long career. All Kushwal kept stabbing her, even after she died, using multiple knives from her kitchen. Now, you were saying several tenants in the building at 104th Street and 106th Avenue heard a woman screaming. One said that she yelled, "He's going to kill me. Help me. He's going to kill me." And she did it 3 times. And he didn't call the police?
Nobody called the police. That's the thing about this story, and Henry's going to get into the gruesome crime scene here in a second, because it is indeed gruesome. But this is also a story, and I'm not blaming the tenants here, but you have to have a little bit of just like, we live in a community, and if you hear your neighbor say, "He's going to kill me, he's going to kill me," 3 times, maybe just pick up the phone, call 911, just in case. Always better safe than sorry.
You just pop it into the Citizen app.
The Citizen app, sure.
If you get the Citizen app, you could just pop it in there and just blast it out, and you can do it totally anonymously if you have to.
Sure. So it seems as if the neighbors didn't do this woman any favors. The man was sort of known around the area as being a little bit aloof, a little crazy. He said that he had PTSD
from his childhood. Yes, it's saying it came from his past in South Sudan as a boy, where he saw a lot of violence and he saw a lot of fucked up shit. Psychologist Leslie Block examined Kushwal at the request of the defense. He determined Kushwal's mental conditions have rendered him incapable of appreciating his actions. Mm-hmm. He shows signs of paranoia and delusions. Now she's saying he's no longer connected with reality.
Yes.
Now, what we cross, because they said he's coming across in a deadened state. He's like, this is a man who cannot sleep at night. He cannot sleep at night because he still sees the militia coming around his home and taking people, and he can hear the screams still. And he sees the next morning the destruction brought on by these militia and how the carnage has been ever present. Right? Very, very intense.
Right.
Because they're saying, and according to Block, that he says that the militias came and killed his girlfriend. Right?
Right.
So I don't know about all that. Very, very intense. He obviously is suffering from something. He's suffering from PTSD.
Yes, he does have PTSD, and obviously growing up in South Sudan will give somebody PTSD, and that, of course, does not allow you or give you the credence to go out and stab someone 100-plus times and leave the crime scene the way that he did. So the question is, this happened in 2015. Why has it taken so long to get this man to trial? And, of course, that is because we are wondering about his mental incompetence. And one of the reasons people say, maybe he's a little on the crazy side, is because of the crime scene he left behind. And Henry, I know you have the details on that.
And now this is from the Edmonton Journal.
Okay.
In an agreed statement of facts read into the record by Crown Prosecutor Lori Trahan, court heard Scow's heart, ovaries, and uterus were removed, and her genitals were mutilated. Her heart was found pinned to a wall with a knife beneath a letter A written in her blood.
Oh, my God.
This shit is fucking for real. He trashed her entire apartment with her blood. It is very, very intense.
Any idea what the A stood for? I have no idea. Was he attempting to... What message?
I'm just hoping that it's not a... I really hope this is not some hidden promotion for Adult Swim or... like something like that.
That's where
I'd be really, really sad. Or that new Brad Pitt movie, Astronaut, where he's the astronaut. What is this one? It's called Ad Astra. It could be for I think is a little controversial. I know it's hard to get eyeballs these days because you got to cut through the noise.
Right, right.
But this is a lot.
I wish it was a marketing ploy so this woman was still alive. So he really had a, what do you think, you know, because we have a mild expertise in crazy ass people. This sounds a little Richard Chasey to me.
Yes.
What does it mean when you go after? What do you think? It's so personal to go after the internal organs, specifically the ovaries, and then he also her genitals were mutilated. So this is something that this man. There's a reason he targeted this part of this woman's body, wouldn't you think?
Well, obviously he felt a great deal of rage. Whether or not he knew what he was doing, I don't know. When it comes to Richard Chase is basically the tale of very intense mental illness,
schizophrenia,
run amok.
Yeah.
Like he can, and with no treatment and no help whatsoever, and complete and total loss of communication with reality. Right.
Right.
When it comes to something like this type of murder, is that he wanted to desecrate the body. It's more just about, did he understand his actions were wrong at the time? Did he know what he was doing? Was because the amount of time spent doing the action, because it's about rage, right?
Right.
And after you're stabbing a body multiple times, then you start to wonder, is this person mentally ill and not in control of his actions? Or is he doing it to... say that he's crazy,
right?
And that, does that make you then extra crazy? Like, if you can say, like, mm-hmm. can you, like, I did it so people would think I'm nuts, and then I would get off on people saying I'm too crazy to commit the crime,
right?
Or I'm not mentally fit for trial. But then people would then, what if it's that then shows you are not mentally fit to do anything.
Absolutely.
It's about the behavior around the murder as well. A neighbor told investigators the pair had issues. He'd encountered Kajwal trying to enter Scow's apartment the day before her death. Mm. He'd been seen yelling at her apartment and mashing on all the building's buzzers. And around 12 a.m. on August 24th, another of Scow's neighbors heard thumping coming from her apartment.
Mm.
Kajwal had been spotted on transit cameras walking from his apartment towards Scow's around that time. Around midnight or 1 a.m., Scow's neighbor across the hall awoke to a strange man standing by her bed. The man ran out when she attacked him with an umbrella, penguin style, but the neighbor did not call police, nor did she call police when she heard a scream from Scow's apartment, nor when she put her ear to the door of Scow's suite and heard moaning.
I think the police would have liked to know what was going on in that case. We'll try to keep you updated. The judge has not yet ruled on the competency of this man. It's possible that he goes to the loony bin forever or a psychiatric ward. I don't want to be disrespectful. A mental hospital. Or it's possible that the judge says, hey, you know what? This was obviously premeditated. It was so vile. It was so brutal. You have to stand trial for the murder of this woman and face incarceration. So either way, he is off the streets, which is good.
Good.
Obviously, yeah, this man is extremely, extremely dangerous.
He is very dangerous, but that's very, very intense. You just got to be careful. And again, you just never let him back in.
No, absolutely. So this,
especially when they start screaming, when you're, because I understand. I know when I'm in a highly agitated state, when I find myself screaming at a structure, when I'm outside of a building and yelling at it, that's when it's time for, like, but now luckily, Natalie is there to scoop me up. Hopefully there's somebody, maybe there's a fan that sees me. If you ever see me screaming at a building outside, just be like, hey, man, doing all right? You know what I mean? Like give a little check in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even I'll go to one of those places for mental exhaustion.
Yeah, like Malibu, Passages of Malibu. You'll fit right in there with all the celebrities. All right. Well, moving on to a sad story, but technically a much less disgusting story. It doesn't involve murder. This is unfortunate. This is about a competitive eating competition, and my heart goes out to this man. A man dies after competing in an amateur taco eating contest during a Grizzlies game.
Dude,
this is very sad. I want to say,
but this is what we talked about.
This is where how I was I'm scared.
We were supposed to do our own self-styled taco eating contest, and I almost died.
I know.
In the process.
You did almost die because your throat
closed
up.
It is a dangerous food. That's a very dangerous food to eat quickly. You need to do it in a relaxed atmosphere.
Sure.
With some guitars playing, a couple of beers in you, getting the throat relaxed.
Yeah, so this is really sad. So just be careful. But he did go out technically a winner. His name was Dana Andrew Hutchinson. He loved sports and he loved having fun. He said that he had not eaten all day. He was ready to do it, ready to go in there and win. He was actually speaking with people, and he told one man, his name was Eric Schmidt. This is according to Eric Schmidt. He said he was going to enter a taco eating contest and has not been eating all day to make himself the winner. Mr. Schmidt goes
Hell
on
yeah.
to say, when watching the event, it was on a Jumbotron, he says, he was winning. I mean, he was hungry. You could tell. My son and I were standing there like, oh, there's the guy, and he was winning because he was starving. But then, unfortunately, he took off. He took one more bite. He began to choke, and they cut the Titantron. They cut the Jumbotron footage. He collapsed. EMTs went up to try to help him, but unfortunately, he died at the hospital about 30 minutes later. And he leaves behind two teenage children. So just be
That's
very
so sad.
It is so sad.
That's so just sad.
Be careful in your eating competitions because, you know,
if you're
I understand
not pro,
you want to win.
But also pros are pros for a reason.
Yeah.
Nadia White talks about just what the kind of what it does to her body, the amount of difficulty it has, because also she throws it all right up too. It all comes out of fucking the back of fucking that's difficult on your throat.
Really?
I mean, it's difficult on your gullet. I will say this one statement's pretty funny where he said from Schmidt, he was winning. I mean, he was hungry. You could tell. My son and I were standing there like, oh, there's the guy. And he was winning because he was starving.
I know, but apparently
which is just you know what? That's a lesson for life.
If
you want to win, you got to be hungry for that win.
You do, but you also got to be careful. Apparently, the rest of the weekend's taco truck throwdown events did go on, but they did indeed cancel some of the competitive eating events. So there you go. I don't know I'm not sure if these were hard or soft tacos. I'm going to assume they were hard tacos, and I would just say go with the soft taco route. I think you're much less likely to choke. But you got to be careful. Anyway, that's just a little story there. That's a story of warning, a story of woe, but also a story of winning. He did go out on top, so you're a good man, and it's unfortunate what happened to you. It just hit
yeah,
me. This story just hit me close to home because I'm currently 4-0 in competitive eating competitions. White Castle burgers, spicy chicken wings, obviously the tacos, and some others along the way. So, you know, this is just...
It's how you're going to go.
This is very possible. But you know what,
But that's man? What you pick it really... You have to really pick it very carefully, which food you want to go in and what level. Because
yes.
I think if you're going to die during an eating competition, guess all, the only proper way to do it, July 4th, Coney Island,
ooh,
hot dog eating competition. So you go down as a true American.
Yes.
That's the only way to properly schedule your death.
I love it. Or if we could get on Sean Evans' Hot Ones, I was tweeting about this.
I don't know if we're famous enough to get on it anymore.
I think we used to be,
but now we used to be at the level where it was appropriate, but I don't know if we can get on, but I'm fucking ready.
Yeah, bro. So if you know Sean, hit him up for us because I'll do that in a gosh darn minute. I would love to check that out and see if I can't beat Stone Cold Steve Austin, who was a total beast on that. Okay, everyone, that's just a little competitive eating story.
The Steve Austin episode was really good.
Oh, yeah, dude. Stone Cold is the best.
Live from your grave.
All right, cool. So this story is about a South Indiana man. Evidently, his name is Joseph Uber Hansley. He's 38. He was charged with murder, burglary, abuse of a corpse, and rape in 2014 after 46-year-old Tammy Jo Blanton was found dead. What makes this case even more brutal is that evidently he ate parts of her brain and parts of her body. So this man truly is a cannibal. So, of course, the question is, kind of sticking with our story previously, is this man competent enough to stand trial?
Evaluation- I mean, again, was he hungry? Was it one of those where it's just like maybe he was just so wrapped up in how hungry he was after murdering?
This is like a Snickers commercial? Is that you're not you when you're hungry? Is that what you're saying? This is like this is like a hangry ad?
Yeah, this is where you have what's his butts, Dicka? Yeah, Mike Dicka in this?
Yes. So his lawyers say he's got debilitating and very serious mental health issues. He's got his behavior is extremely strange. Again, we'll see. He'd been convicted and spent 12 years in a Utah state prison after killing the mother of his child. So this is not the first time that he has committed extremely violent acts.
Shit.
So this is bizarre that he was even out about that story. So, but this story, this murder, took place on September 11th, 2014, around 3 o'clock in the morning. Blanton called police to report that Oberhansley was trying to break into her home. Police arrived. He agreed to leave. Officers left her home. When she didn't arrive at work the next morning, co-workers called the cops. They said they found a knife in his pocket, and it was covered in his ex-girlfriend's hair and blood when the cops finally got this guy and tracked him down. He stabbed her in the head, neck, and body. Then he cut her open with an electric saw and removed part of her brain and ate it raw, then cooked and ate another section. He cut out her heart and ate that too, along with a part of a lung. So, one of those hyper-personal, weird, seems like maybe a schizophrenic break or something.
It's either a break. You know what always gets me is when the planning gets that intense. Where it's
right.
Like, I don't know whether that's ever, like, that's always a question. Please, if you are either, you work for a psychological forensics, you work like with people that have done this type of gruesome murder, please email us at sidestorieslpotl at gmail.com to help with this conversation.
Ugh.
Because I really want to know if an intricate destruction of a body, something like this that takes time and
right.
takes effort, where you have to go and get tools and you have to think about how you're doing it. Does that make you more mentally ill or less mentally ill legally?
Right.
Like, does that make you more cognizant of what it is that you do that you're doing?
Mm.
Right, where you sit and you think about it, or is something that protracted? Does that mean that you sat and you've been like thinking about it for a while?
Yeah.
Or is it also like, I don't really know. Or is it half, if it's fucking half of one, half another, one of those fucking like gray areas where
right.
we really don't understand the human mind?
It does seem premeditated, of course, showing up there
a little
early,
bit.
And then again, with this very, I guess he wanted her to be a part of him, or I mean, we can't do a deep dive into the psychology of this person. We're not psychologists, but my God, there was something very personal there.
That's what they talk about with cannibals, though, right? The cannibals really, it's all about incorporating the victim into you permanently.
Right.
Jeffrey Dahmer openly said that's why he did it, but that he was also the loneliest of the lonely serial killers, right? Like, he is definitely the heartbreaker serial killer, so I don't really know.
It sounds sort of like a mixture, then, of a process or product, right? The process killer, someone who loves the process of killing, product killer, who just someone who wants the corpse, so someone who is maybe a necrophiliac. They don't necessarily want to murder, but they want the product. And so in this case, it seems as if it's a little bit of both, because it seems as if obviously he had the intention of cannibalism, but then he seemed to relish in the moments of this woman's
Absolutely.
Demise.
Absolutely. Because it's all the afterwards, right? It's
right.
all of that, like, playing with the body. It's having then control.
Right,
over a
right.
product,
yeah.
right, where it is now, it is my plaything, it is my toy. This is very, very scary.
Yeah.
And you got to be careful who you date out there.
Be careful and listen. If you're friends with someone or like coworkers, listen when they're like, this person's really dangerous, whether it be a boyfriend or a girlfriend. There's a lot of kooky people out there, so just be careful.
I really want to put him in the category of kooky people.
Yeah.
Because he really is just, he's like, a really kooky, quirky guy.
Yeah, you know, like,
you know?
Like, yeah, like, what was the name of Woody Allen's love in all of his movies? the woman that always was in every one of his movies, his love interest.
Oh, Diane Keaton?
Yes, a real Diane Keaton. Like
the
kooky,
real
like,
Diane
yeah, like
Keaton.
Wearing a suit. And it's like, ooh, that's kooky. That's fun.
I actually want to cover this story really quick. Not the Blob story. It's all right. This story. Let me cover this story. It's from the Daily Mail. So it's a rag, but it's fun.
Okay.
Police find mummified human remains in a closet in a shrine to an unknown deity at the home of a New Jersey man who is accused of sexually assaulting a 13-year-old girl.
Jeez.
New Jersey police discovered mummified human remains and an altar to an unknown deity in the home of a man who has been accused of sexually assaulting a 13-year-old girl. Robert Frank Williams, 53, of Newark, was arrested on Friday following reports that he had abused the child over several months. The Essex County Prosecutor's Office said the abuse began in 2018. But now they have not confirmed the identity of the remains, and it's unclear if the remains are from an adult or a child. It was a mummified human in a bin in his closet, literally
oh
in a storage
gosh.
Bin. It showed pictures from his Facebook page. I love the fact that we're in an age, too, where, like, can you imagine just, like, having followed Jeffrey Dahmer when he was before
right.
the crimes are out, like, what it would see his daily life, what it was like
yes,
on fucking social media.
And in this Daily Mail article, and you can find it, the headline is police find mummified human remains in a closet and a shrine. And then you guys can go from there. I'm sure that'll come up. But you can see the pictures of this shrine, and it really is extremely interesting.
It's very intricate.
This guy also would put captions on all the pictures. So this is a caption that he had on one of the photos that showed a bunch of dirt stuffed inside two sandwich bags.
I'll read it.
Yeah,
I'll read this.
This is his quote on social media.
I collect dirts from men's and women's tombs, Catholic and Jewish cemeteries, as well as all required dirts to build pots. If you need specific dirts, then I can collect any amount needed. And it's all very strangely spaced out, strangely spelled. It's pretty much a general. It's a general fucking, I'd say an altar. I mean, it seems pretty cool. He has several pictures of him with a crown on. There's another picture of him in full top hat with what it could only be described as voodoo-like accessories. A lot of skulls, a lot of beads, a red cape. There's obviously some specific thing that he is working towards.
Yes.
Another photo just shows a bunch of tombstones and the shapes of crosses. And he says, these are some tombstones I acquired and also for sale. And then he had a giant pentagram with candles. But this is very perfunctory. This is not even a pentagram. It's a Jewish star.
This reminds me a little bit of us covering the early life of Joseph Smith, of course, in our Mormonism series. And thanks so much for such a wonderful response. Everyone's been so sweet about that series because, which I know meant a lot, because this is one of those deep dive, mind-breaking series that we've embarked on. So the encouragement is wonderful. But Joseph Smith doing the grave robbing, it seems, is he just like trying to sell this on Etsy? Does he think that you can just go steal stuff from graves and be like, and I flip it. See, what I do is I go to the graves and I flip it and I flip it.
People do it all the time still. The ghoul market is open and it is flourishing, especially because of people like us, because we are like that. We collect these odd bits. So people like him, technically he's a businessman up until molesting. Once you do the molest, then you shift from businessman to I guess technically if you have $1 billion, you become like more important.
I don't know.
If you have less than $1 billion, you become a criminal.
Absolutely. Yeah,
but
obviously
the human remains, but he could have just dug it up from a fucking grave.
Honestly, he very much could have. This man, a dangerous man who is without a doubt a risk to society, probably needs to be behind bars. So anyway, that's just that little story. You never know who the hell you're living next to. Not to make you scared, but I'm just going to say, have a barbecue. Just, you know, it's the summertime.
Out.
Once a month, be like, it's neighbor barbecue. And if someone comes over, you know, dress.
So what you working on?
Yeah.
If you say what you working on, the guy's like, I'm beginning an entire world of necromancy and power. And I'll tell you what, I'll show you some dirts. Even if you need specific dirts, I can get as much of it as it takes. And you're like, hot dog? Do you eat meat? I actually don't remember if you eat meat or not. And then noted.
Gotcha. Yes. Okay, cool. So let's do Hero of the Week.
Side story.
Hero of the Week.
hero of this week. You know, it's so fun. It's so fun when it's an animal week. Quite frankly, I'm not going to say that my feelings were hurt, but I was tagged quite a bit in a photo that went viral from the Iowa State Fair involving a large hog, and the hog's name is Brutus. He weighs about 1,200 pounds, and he was shown chugging a Bud Light Lime at the Iowa State Fair.
You were tagged in this fucking picture so many times in a way that I can only... The only way I can describe it is a victory for the Zebrowski camp. Another victory.
The lies that you have spread and sowed into society is just unreal. This is how misinformation... This is just a joke, but this is in reality how misinformation spreads. I don't drink Bud Light Lime. But now
yes, he did. Back in the day, he did. You did, and you bragged about it.
I did not.
And I know one day we will find that audio, and it will be presented.
I do not think so. But anyway...
I know for a fact I watched you do it. I know
you are a liar. He is 1,200 pounds. He slammed that Bud Light Lime down, and he was super cute while doing it. So good job, Brutus. I'm not sure if he won or if he didn't win. I'm not even really sure how a pig wins or loses a pig competition. I'm not sure who goes to them, but we were in Iowa at the same time, and now I really regret not having one more day in Des Moines where we could have just gone and been like, yeah, Brutus, woo!
Go, boy, go! It would be fun to buy him. It would be fun to buy him, and then all of a sudden you just have him around, and then, I mean, honestly, we would just eat him.
Yeah, maybe at some point when he got too old. Although, I do love piggies. I've said it before. I'm not, like, cows, okay. Chickens, okay. But pigs, they're friends with dogs. And if I got a pig, I would give up pork if I could. And you know what? I do try. But then I found out it's in everything.
I mean, I just like pork.
Yeah.
So I don't eat it all the time. But you know what's always kind of disappointing? Honestly, a pork chop at a restaurant. It's always a little bit disappointing.
And you know what?
It's always a little underwhelming.
You know what else I don't like is pork jerky. It's not good for the jerky.
Don't like pork jerky. Mm-hmm. But you know what I do like? Oh, cured pork. I'll take any second of the week. Mm-hmm. I also like the way I make pork chops because I'll sometimes do it my own mom's way.
Is that right?
Where you get the country style ribs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is like it is sort of gross. But it works. You take a mixture of sweet and sour sauce with a mixture of either like you get some form of the Thai chili sauce, that red chili sauce,
right,
or sriracha or something that you like. You mix it in with sauerkraut.
Whoa!
And you mix it all together in with country style ribs, and you bake that for at an hour, fucking hour and a half, 420.
Wow!
Right, 425. Ooh, sweet. And salty.
Well, there you go. You've learned a lot of things on this episode that's going to shorten your life. You learned mm-hmm. how to play roulette, and you learned how to make stick-to-your-rib barbecue, which is inevitably going to kill you.
There are certain recipes that my mom just had, and I don't know where it came from, but she did it with the duck sauce.
Oh, interesting, actually. I've never heard that. All right, everyone.
It's got that tang.
Yeah. I suppose that's...
I have some listener...
Great, let's do it.
So number one, so this comes from Jay.
Okay.
I've been working backwards through the episodes, and at one point, Henry had talked about the documentary A Dangerous Son.
Mm.
I worked in a residential treatment facility for a few years working with adolescents with behavioral issues. For the most part, these kids had an imbalance that caused them to have little to no control over their impulses and emotions or lived through a trauma that changed the way they interact with others. But every now and then, you'd come across one that was purely a psychopath. I've seen some wild shit in my 7 years at the facility, but one that sticks with me the most was an incident with a kid that I will call Jared. Jared was violent and impulsive. He had no remorse and would attack people with no provocation. He would at times break into fits of laughter that was followed by ramblings of his desire to kill people, set fire to animals, or destroy the world around him. One day, Jared went off on one of his aggressive outbursts and began stabbing himself in the neck and chest with a broken piece of plastic.
Ooh.
I spent the remainder of the evening within arm's reach of him, several times having to fend off an attack or place him into a seclusion room to prevent him from attacking other residents. At one point near the end of my shift, a sudden calm came over him, and he began to describe to me an idea that he had. He wanted to kill a dog, cut off its legs and head.
Ugh.
Then he wanted to kill a person and remove their arms, legs, and head, then sew the dog's appendages onto the human's body. That's creative.
Kind of
creative.
Okay.
After telling me about this, Jared had no more outbursts for the evening, and my shift ended with no further incident. The next afternoon when I arrived for my shift, Jared was no longer at the facility. I was informed that during the morning while outside for recreation, he climbed over the fence and eloped from the facility. I was later informed from the police when he was returned to us that he had made his way to a nearby highway and was hitchhiking. He was picked up by an older woman. Per her report, once Jared got into her car, he did not speak a word to her. He only sat in the passenger seat, turned towards her, and stared at her while laughing to himself without looking away for several miles.
Oh, my God.
He would not answer any questions that she asked. She eventually pulled into a gas station and said she was going to get them some candy and called the police.
Oh, my God. That is horrifying. Thank God that woman is still alive. Oh, I mean,
that's scary, huh?
It seems like a human centipede type thing. It seems like, you know, he's creative, I guess. If you were Tom Savini and you were putting together a horror film, and if we lived in an alternate universe where you could create a man dog like that.
I'm stealing this idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. We can make a horror movie out of it, but okay. Well, I'm happy that he is where he is.
Yes.
All right. I got this one coming in from H. This is entitled, Hail Yourselves, UFO Sighting. They say, ever since I saw a UFO when I was a child, I've kept my eyes to the sky. Today I was driving up to pick up my best friend from the airport, keeping myself alert because of how shitty Norfolk drivers can be. We got some shade on Norfolk drivers. All of a sudden, I see something that can only be explained as a flying grain of rice moving in a way that a plane or a jet would not move. It was moving at a steady pace at a semi-quick speed and didn't get any bigger as I drove closer. Now, since I'm currently in the U.S. Navy, I've seen and heard plenty of military aircraft, and this UFO was not, and there was no noise. I was overwhelmed by the feeling that this is not something that was man-made. Unfortunately, it disappeared over the trees because I could not get any other photo or any photo at all. So what is this, Henry, this sort of flying grain of rice? It sort of reminds me of the
Tic Tac UFO that was seen over the USS Nimitz, which we also cover.
Yes.
One of the videos of the same type of object that we cover on the live show.
And what was the name of that large, what looked to be kind of an asteroid that was going through Earth? I forget. It's got a very, very long name.
Something like that, yes. Very interesting. I don't know. I feel like there are many types of these types of crafts, and I don't know why. I actually got another set of videos that have sent if they had these videos. I've seen multiple ones. They were interesting, but they might be flares.
Oh, okay.
But something that's solid. It's all about if it zigzags, it's weird. Anything that specifically moves in a way that planes do not move.
Right.
It's very, very important.
And in a way that a flare does not move.
No.
Do we have any more emails?
I do. This one's a little bit thicker, but I love it because it comes from an actual microbiologist. This comes from P.
Okay.
Who we actually met, I believe, after a Kansas City show like several years ago, which is very nice. I'm so glad that she stayed in contact.
Awesome.
Our military is known to research select agents both for the purpose of infecting populations and for countering such threats to our own population. Typically, biological weapons cause acute, potentially fatal infection with a low dose of microbes that can be transmitted via aerosol. A good example is Coxiella burnetii, right? A causative agent of Q fever that can cause infection with less than 10 microbes delivered via aerosol. It can be debilitating, but it's usually not lethal. The U.S. government has investigated the weaponization of Coxiella and many other infectious agents as bioweapons. A better example is Bacillus anthritis, aka anthrax. Cue metal riffs. This microbe forms spores that spread quite widely and easily and causes severe acute disease that is debilitating and potentially lethal. It has been used successfully in recent times in the infamous attack on our government in 2001. Lyme disease, caused by Borrelia burgdorferi, because it goes back to us talking about weaponized ticks.
Right.
Does not fit the profile of a typical biological weapon as it causes chronic symptoms that develop very slowly. The early symptoms mostly consist of periodic joint pain, and it can progress to more severe to more severe symptoms after many years. Thus, in coldly logical terms, it is difficult to identify how B. burgdorferi would be a useful biological weapon. I'm absolutely slaughtering these Latin names. I have no clue.
Oh, they're extremely difficult.
No clue. It does hardly anything in the short term, and it's not rapidly or easily transmitted. So I was at first skeptical when I heard about these weaponized ticks. However, our government has experimented with many things in the name of defense. Not all of them are good ideas. After a bit of light research, I found that the newbie's claims that have been made by others, namely Michael Carroll's account of weaponized ticks in Lab 257, the disturbing story of the government's secret germ laboratory. It's totally feasible, and it seems quite likely that Borrelia was just one of the microbes being evaluated as a biological weapon. And during my training as a microbiologist, we heard lots of stories of stunning missteps and lax practices, and I got to experience one firsthand. Even with all the precautions and safety training, there are still horrific accidents. The lab I joined at University of Chicago had quite a history. One man died of plague, and one student contracted a flesh-eating infection on her face. Jeez. I'd be happy to give more details on the story here if you guys are interested. We are.
Absolutely
interesting. But these stories came back to the 70s, and apparently she said, you know, remember that in the 70s, people were still mouth pipetting urine back then, using piss, using their mouth to fucking transfer piss to different tubes. So a lot of mistakes were made.
I don't know.
Okay. And I have one last quick one.
All right.
And this is called How Ben Kissel Ruined My Sex Life.
Oh, come on.
This comes from R. I've been meaning to email you for a while. A couple months ago, my boyfriend and I were in bed watching TV like we usually do when I get off work, flipping between the Travel Channel and Adult Swim when things started getting pretty steamy. After a while, we heard the hard way why TV in the background is an awful, terrible idea. I'm on top. My boyfriend's about to finish.
He looks me
dead in my eye and says, "Not now, Ben." I'm utterly confused, so I turn around and it's Kissel on TV talking about aliens in Area 51 very excitedly.
Oh my God. Well, honestly, between your pretty faces going to hell and the talking head alien show, I understand we probably ruined a lot of people's sex lives. I'm just going to say turn it on to HBO where it's all sexy. Come watch Game of Thrones, you know, get in the mood.
You know you got to listen to Sade.
Yes.
Or Portishead. But yes. Portishead is only if you're going to cut each other while you're having sex.
All right. Well, we try to do our best. Sometimes we save lives and sometimes we ruin sex. You know, it happens.
Fuck her. I can just hear you going, yeah, shoot it in her, big boy. Yeah, yeah.
Why is he talking
Black
about
on 17.
This? All right, everyone. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We cannot wait to see our European friends. This tour is going to be so much fun.
Can't fucking wait.
I'm like fantasizing. I'm 13 days away from going into a Dublin pub, getting my JMO, getting that Guinness straight out of the teat.
Oh, my friend.
Oh,
we're going to have ourselves a couple of beers.
Oh, we are going to.
Me and my friend. And we're going to get our asses kicked.
We are going to be very polite. I'm not going to, you know. Hey, if we survive Glasgow, I think we can survive Dublin.
You just roll with it. Unfortunately, what it means to survive Glasgow and to survive these places, you just got to drink until you start making as much sense as they don't make to us. That's, you got to get on the same level.
All right, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening.
Love your life. Love your life like you just slipped into a pool full of Guinness.
Ooh.
And I tell you, I feel the frothy top.
Yeah.
Frothy top always get on top of your tits there. Oh, you got to live.
Yeah.
Live like you're about to get on a plane for 7 hours to Europe and you got to get a little pillow for your butthole.
Yeah. That's your
story.
Just
make sure you listen to yourself and then just laugh about how we're just a bunch of meat. Just a bunch of bones inside of it jangling around. And sometimes you get your penis sucked. Sometimes you get your vagina pleasured.
Mm-hmm,
but
sure.
Other times, you got to do it for yourself. And I think that's important all the time to remember. If you're not getting the pleasure you need, you got to go get it life.
You're requesting people masturbate while laughing vigorously.
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you all so much for listening. And never forget to hail yourself.
Hail Satan.
Magustalations.
Hail me.
Ooh, very nice.
Thank you.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors. You can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.